If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on ITR. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by the mature cheddar cheese, the fine wine that is Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
Feeling good, Kenny, feeling good. How is yourself?
I'm good. I hate letting agents, but I'm good. They're the worst people on the planet Earth, as we've discussed at length for 20 minutes before we came on to record.
Just be thankful, listeners, that you didn't hear any of that.
I know, I was just ranting away. We should mention, though, that unfortunately we are not going to be here next Tuesday/Wednesday, because it's going to be Christmas. So we're going to have to maybe do something between Christmas and New Year, unless you're away in some sort of extravagant holiday. But we will obviously, after this, not be back until after Christmas, because we need to make sure that, we get a break. We've been podcasting exactly. All year.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I'm sure we can record something next week sometime, Kenny. I am around.
Yeah, we'll maybe do something towards the end of next week, like Thursday or Friday, 27, 28, so we're not like doing it on Christmas Eve or on Christmas Day. But we hope that you are enjoying your December, whether you celebrate Christmas or not. I know you'd said, Finn, that you had a picture of some of your Christmas decorations that were up, but some people don't celebrate it, so we just hope that people are having a nice December, whatever they're getting up to.
Exactly, that's right. Live and let live. That's this podcast motto. One of our many mottos, but lots of people don't bother with it, and I absolutely respect that. If you find it too commercial, or you don't like the religious aspect, or you just think it's too much fuss and just want to ignore it, more power to you, I say.
More power to you. I think the... we've got a lot to talk about with, obviously, TLC and the fallout from Raw. But I did very quickly want to bring something up. I mean, I've not seen it, and I don't think you've seen it, but, you know, we can talk about the general story. At the end of the NWA Into the Fire pay-per-view this past weekend, Nick Aldis had retained his NWA World Championship, the £10 of gold, and the lights went out, and they were joined by Marty Scurll, who turned up at the show. A bit of a strange one, because Skrull's contract was coming up with Ring of Honor. We don't really know what his future is. A lot of people thought he was AEW bound. Were you surprised to hear that he had turned up in the NWA? And surely this isn't going to be where he is exclusively.
No, I mean, it did seem like this time last year, when you were interviewing Cody Rhodes, and I interviewed him as well for Inside the Ropes, and he was really stating that they were all going to stick together. So, I mean, you know, Marty's been the guy who's been in the wilderness away from the rest of them for the last year. So it does seem rather odd that he wouldn't immediately, you know, make a beeline for All Elite Wrestling. I mean, one would imagine that that is where he will end up. You know, perhaps he's just passing through here for a few weeks or a month, or I'm not sure what. Maybe he just feels like this would be a nice little detour for him, you know, before he commits to All Elite Wrestling. I mean, let's face it, AEW is where the money is if you're not working for WWE or New Japan. I mean, NWA Power is not going to be able to compete with All Elite Wrestling in terms of pay and, you know, other benefits that wrestlers get. So, I mean, yeah, it just seems to me like it's just something he's doing temporarily before he joins AEW. Maybe they've got a plan to make his debut at the next AEW pay-per-view. Then maybe they want to, you know, do something huge with him there rather than just introducing him on Dynamite one week. Maybe that's their long-term goal. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I've got to believe that it's not his long-term destination, but I actually think it's a really cool thing that he has done by kind of shaking things up and doing something that people weren't expecting. So props to Marty Scurll for kind of, you know, keeping people guessing a little bit. And I think he is a hot commodity, someone who... you know, and you could probably speak to this more. I mean, he won the... He didn't win British Boot Camp, did he? He was in the final with Spud, and Spud won it. Rockstar Spud won Boot Camp, I think.
That's right, yeah. And it was the twins as well, wasn't it? They were the last...
The Blossom Twins, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And he was, like, Party Marty. And, like, I'll be honest, I didn't really think much of him. And then he developed the villain character and just became this, you know, big, big name in pro wrestling. I worked alongside him in WCPW for a while, and he's got star power. He's got something about him. He's also a super nice guy as well. But I mean, it feels to me like AEW is, you know, you've talked a lot about how you want to see AEW deepen their roster. And he's definitely someone who I think they should, you know, be all hands on deck trying to get, because I think that he could flourish in AEW, whereas in WWE, NXT, I think he would just kind of be one of the guys there.
Yeah, oh yeah, and NXT is not the destination for him at all. That is just somewhere, there's no way he would excel there. I mean, I just can't see it. I mean, AEW, his friends work there, they're going to be sympathetic. I think there'll be a big move in there to maximize his talents, you know, and to conceal his weaknesses, really try and make the most of Matty Skull as a character and in-ring performer. You know, maybe you just, you know, maybe this NWA thing is just something else for his CV, you know, another string for his bow. It's like, well, let's just go through there, work for them for a little while. That's something else that I can say I've done. And then I'll go to All Elite Wrestling after that. It's hard for me to believe that there isn't a contract waiting for him there and a nice juicy contract at that. That's assuming AEW is still handing out those juicy contracts. It has occurred to me, Kenny, you know, that they're paying these guys. All these guys have been bragging about how much money they're making in All Elite Wrestling. And you think to yourself, well, where exactly is the money coming from to pay these contracts? That's something that has occurred to me. Is that something that's crossed your mind as well?
It has occurred to me, actually. And I do wonder, I mean, we talked a little bit about AEW's attendance last week, I think. And I know they put a thing out saying, and I think this is genuinely an impressive stat that they've already sold over 100,000 tickets for the 15 shows that they've done. And that is pretty impressive for because the thing I feared about AEW is that I feared that when they started doing live weekly shows around the US, that they would have trouble drawing people every single week. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't think they'd be drawing 10,000 people straight away, but to draw 4,000 to 5,000 people every week, everywhere they go, is fairly impressive. But, you know, like you say, they do need to build on that kind of stuff. They need to build... I was actually listening to Meltzer talking about the ratings the other day, and he was talking about how there was a number about, if you, including the DVR numbers, AEW does have... still have 1.4 million people watching the show, which was what that debut number was that we saw. But as we know, the DVR number is nowhere near as important as the live number. So they need to be getting people to watch live, because I'm curious. I don't know how people, like, you know, how do people watch these Wednesday night shows? Do you watch one live? Do you watch the other the next day? Do you DVR both of them? You know, if you're in the UK, I mean, I can't imagine anybody who is listening to this, or the majority of people who listen to this that wait for the ITV4 version. That's all I'll say about that. I feel like people find other means to watch it. With NXT, you also have the network. But I'm curious, you know, I don't know what they can do to make people watch live of you, because I think that now in 2019, live wrestling isn't as big a thing as it was even 5 years ago. I mean, Eric Bischoff, not to toot our interviews, Finn, but why not? You touted the Honky Tonk Man for about 17 minutes one day. But Eric Bischoff, when he spoke to us at StarCast, he had said that, you know, the numbers that NXT and AEW, if TNA were getting those numbers on Spike when they first went on, it would be considered a massive failure.
Yes.
So now it's changed a lot. So I don't really know what you can do to convince people to watch wrestling live, because I think a lot of people now just kind of watch it when they want to watch it.
Well, Kenny, you could say that about any type of program, couldn't you? I mean, and look at the ratings that football still draws. I mean, look at the number that Strictly final drew on BBC One Saturday.
Let me rephrase it then. Do you think that it's just that wrestling is more of a, like, people who are watching it, they either are okay to wait to watch it, like they don't see it as a, you know, if you watch the Super Bowl, it would be virtually impossible for you to get out your door and go to work and not find out what the score was. You kind of have to watch it then. And there was, with wrestling, I mean, I remember Robert had said to me that 5 years ago, you used to be, go on Twitter during Raw and everybody was tweeting about the show. And now people aren't engaging live as much as they were before, just with wrestling shows kind of across the board. So I wonder, I mean, what is the answer to getting more people to watch live in 2019, do you think?
Make the product better and create more stars. That simple.
There you go. No rocket science here.
But no, seriously, I mean, you hear all the excuses all the time whenever numbers are down. Oh, it's this, it's that, it's the other. But then other programs still draw huge numbers. And I know that lots of programs, the viewership is down. I understand that. And like, for instance, on Sky Atlantic, if it's like a, or like a HBO show, if you say on Sky Atlantic, if it's an A show, like say Game of Thrones, not that the final season of Game of Thrones was an A show, in my opinion. I mean, it was a D show at best. But I mean, what they would do is that would be shown live, wouldn't it, on like Sunday night, early Monday morning. And then they would show it on Monday at 9 o'clock or whatever it was. But you would, they wouldn't put all episodes on the Sky box sets section of the Sky system. You had to watch it each week. Whereas if it's a lesser show, sometimes they'll put all episodes up and you can binge watch it. But I mean, if it's a show that they're depending on to draw big numbers, you'll have to watch it every week when it comes on. So that definitely still exists. I mean, I can't remember what the season finale of Game of Thrones, the final season, did earlier this year. I can't remember the number, but it was like a record number. It was huge. So people will still watch a program when it's on if the program is must-see. Don't try and tell me that they won't, because all the proof is out there week after week. And it's up to wrestling, really, to come up with reasons for its audience to tune in every week and not to miss it, and not to put it off a few days.
Do you think is that a problem wrestling-wide, that there's not they're not creating across the board anybody who is must-see?
Well, I mean, in a moment, we're going to be talking about TLC, we're going to be talking about Raw. We may talk about last week's SmackDown, but I mean, do we even need to bother? We maybe won't even bother talking about last week's SmackDown.
Nope.
And there it is, in a nutshell, my point entirely. If we don't need to review the December 13th SmackDown, that tells you all you need to know. There was hardly anything on it worth watching. There's hardly anything on it for us to talk about. And that is a big part of the reason why the numbers are down. So, I mean, people can make excuses, but I mean, I do understand and obviously accept that technology has changed and it's easier now to watch things than it was 20 years ago when no one had broadband. So there's lots of different ways of watching the programs. I get all that. And it's unrealistic to expect wrestling to draw the numbers that it used to draw 20 years ago. That's simply not going to happen. But I think its numbers can be higher than they are now. And at various points this year, they've been higher than they are now. Case in point, the SmackDown debut on Fox drew a huge number, didn't it, Kenny?
It did. It drew like, what, close to 4 million? Was it like 3,800,000, something like that?
Exactly. Comparative to where we are now, it drew a huge number because people wanted to see what this program was going to be like on the new channel. Perhaps there were people who didn't watch it on cable for whatever reason, who were in on Friday night and there was nothing else on the TV. So let's give wrestling a chance because it's been really well promoted and these stars are going to appear or may appear or they're going to do something huge and seismic. So we've got to watch. And that was WWE creating a buzz for a free TV program. Now, I'm not expecting them to do that every week because they can't. But they can do that a few times a year. And I think with more acts that are over and better storylines, more compelling storylines, they could get the numbers up from where they are now. I think that's all absolutely achievable. I'm not suggesting that SmackDown is going to draw 3.8 million viewers a week. That's not realistic. But I think they could draw closer to 3 million than they're doing now if the product was better and they had more stars who were over and who connected with a larger audience. But to say that you cannot draw viewers for a television program that is broadcast live anymore is simply untrue, because we saw that in October. Same goes for Dynamite. I mean, there was a massive buzz for the premiere and they haven't come close to that number since.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that, again, that proves the point, I think, that you've got a premiere, you've got a promotion that people are talking about. It's very well advertised. It's new. It's different. What are these guys going to do? What are these women going to do? Let's tune in to see. So the people are still out there that are willing to watch wrestling, but you have to give them a reason to do so.
I can't even remember what our original point was, but I think we veered off into an interesting tangent, as we usually do, Finn. So
whether it was interesting or not, well, people will have to decide that for themselves. But, you know, I'm glad I made my point anyway.
Exactly. You are right. I mean, the SmackDown episode before TLC, there's not really anything to talk about, because it all kind of became null and void by TLC, and also, you know, it just wasn't that interesting a program. What did you make of TLC overall as a show? People were fairly down on it. I mean, Sandra and I both kind of gave it a thumbs down, said it wasn't a very good show at all. Last pay-per-view of the decade. How did it work? How did it resonate to you?
I mean, there was a few good matches on there. I mean, it didn't really feel like WWE was that bothered about it. We talked about this last week, I think. Very much feels like we're in that sort of, you know, gulf between Survivor Series and Royal Rumble, where they're just working out what they're going to do for Rumble and the push to WrestleMania. So, I mean, I think TLC normally falls into this trap. I think that's fair to say. I mean, if you haven't seen it, there isn't really a whole lot on there to recommend, sadly. And one of the matches, particularly the main event, was a bit of a shambles, really. I mean, probably the best match was Aleister Black versus Buddy Murphy in the ring. Would you agree with that, Kenny?
Yeah, it was a very good match. I mean, I would say my favourite match in the ring was probably the opener, the tag opener ladder match, but I think that and the Aleister Black, Buddy Murphy were definitely the two best matches on the show. But let's get straight into it. So the show opens with the ladder match, the tag team ladder match for the SmackDown tag team titles, with the New Day and the Revival, super hot crowd. Kofi Kingston felt pretty energized for the first time in a while. What did you make of the match?
I would agree. This was Kofi Kingston's best night since WrestleMania, really. Revival versus New Day, Big E and Kofi Kingston. I mean, yeah, it felt like a good match. Kofi felt relevant again. It was like he was pushed to the fore. He did more in this than Big E, from what I could work out. And there was a lot of original, imaginative stunts in there. Showed that they really put a lot of effort into laying this thing out, which is always nice to see. You always feel like these guys have put a lot of effort into this match. They really care about this match and they want to entertain us. And I think when you get that impression from the talent, then you really feel rewarded as a fan, don't you, Kenny? I mean, you really do. Mm-hmm. And this was one of those matches. I mean, Big E hit the big ending off to take him out. And then Kingston used the belts to knock Dawson off another ladder. And then as the belts swung back, he grabbed them to win the match and retain the SmackDown Tag Team title. So, I mean, it was a really good match, yeah. I mean, I thought Aleister Black versus Buddy Murphy was technically better and felt more realistic. But this was a really good opener, a real, you know, adrenaline-pumping crowd pleaser. Really good start to the show. Should just mention as well, Kenny, on the kickoff, it was Andrade versus Humberto Carrillo, and not much noise for this. This really felt like a match that no one was really that bothered about. And they picked up And I thought they really dragged the audience into this match. And this was another good effort from Carrillo and Andrade. Carrillo scored the pin. Andrade walked out on Zelina Vega. He was furious that he lost again. So, I mean, I thought the kickoff match was pretty good as well. I thought they worked really hard to turn fan indifference, you know, into fan energy. So I want to give them some props for that.
That's the commitment that Finn Martin has to this podcast. He'll even watch the kickoff show.
Elsewhere on the kickoff show, it was really funny. They had Lashley and Lana on, and Booker T asked Lashley if he thought that Lana was holding him back. And that was really funny, actually. And Lashley said, of course she wasn't. And then Lana insulted everyone on the panel. She actually was, I found her highly entertaining on the kickoff. She really was funny. Just ripping into everyone. Also, another interesting point from the kickoff, one point Revival confronted Booker T, started giving him some grief, and they ended up challenging Harlem Heat to a match. And, you know, Booker sat there and he took a lot of abuse from these guys. They were really ripping into him. And I thought, are they setting something up here? You know, Booker T and Stevie Ray versus the Revival. Would you be on board for that, Kenny?
Anything that gives me Stevie Ray promos, I'm probably going to be in for. Like, because he's so ridiculously bad that it'd be great. So if we can get Stevie Ray in for some promos, yes, please.
I mean, they were really giving Booker a hard time. And to his credit, he just sat there and took it. And he just said, "We don't know, I'm setting the example here as the elder statesman." So I thought Booker was actually really good on the kickoff, or at least in the parts of the kickoff that I watched. I must confess, I didn't watch it all, Kenny.
Even you have your limits.
Exactly.
But then we then had the Aleister Black Buddy Murphy match that you were talking about. Aleister Black getting the big win. Crowd were pretty into it, and it was a good match.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Black's nose was busted. They were talking about how he taking these shots to the jaw. You know, Buddy Murphy does the V trigger, the Kenny Omega knees, and everything, which always looked really good. It was kind of a strange match, and I'm not sure if the opposite effect to what was intended was achieved here, because it did look like Buddy Murphy really took it to Aleister Black in this match. And even though Murphy lost, he was pinned by the Black Mask, sort of looked to me like Buddy Murphy had this match won. So he sort of did look stronger than Aleister Black in this match. So I think, in a sense, this was like one of those, you know, those old All Japan matches where the winner gets something out of it and the loser does as well. So I thought this was maybe by accident. This match was a minor triumph, I thought.
It was my favourite ever wrestling match that comes from a feud that started with a game of Chap Chap Runaway. My favourite ever.
Well, mine too. I mean, sadly, I still don't have a whole lot of faith that either Black or Murphy is going anywhere in WWE.
I have more faith they'll do something with Black than Murphy.
Yeah, possibly. The thing that's going to hold Black back is that I don't think Vince is going to be a huge fan of his tattoos. He doesn't have that classic WWE body. He sort of, even though he's obviously in great shape, he doesn't have that, you know, Vince, but the body that Vince likes. He's not somebody that's a classic WWE type performer that they would push. So I'm not convinced. I think Buddy Murphy may actually have more chance because he's got more of the characteristics that they like. But I may be even wrong about that. And I hope both of these guys get something out of this match. I fear they won't, but I hope that people backstage watching, looking and saying, you know what, these guys have got some talent. Let's find something meaningful for them both to do.
That's the hope.
In fact, it almost felt at the end like it had been such a tough match and Black had won. What I would have liked was almost for Black to go over to Buddy Murphy and, you know, shake his hand, pick him up, and then for them two to celebrate together. Maybe they could have formed a tag team. I mean, let's face it, the Raw tag team division needs some assistance around about now. Maybe these two guys could make a good team.
You never know. Up next in the show, we had the Viking Raiders coming out for an open challenge against the OC. This was just beyond dull. 8.5 minutes for the Raw Tag Team titles with two teams that nobody cares about, ending in a double countout while fans on the outside ate KFC chicken.
Yes, double countout, and then afterwards, Eric and Ivor powerbombed Cal through the KFC table. So the whole point of this match was to promote KFC. Not the Viking Raiders, not Gallows and Anderson, not the tag team title, KFC. Yeah, it
was... You just can't make up.
Well, you just can't, yeah. So this was an open challenge, which is another way of saying we can't be bothered writing a storyline for these guys. I mean, how lazy is the open challenge gimmick, Kenny? It's inexcusable.
I mean, also when the open challenge gimmick involves the Viking Raiders, who are, you know, beyond just, like, I mean, I don't know if, I can't work out whether maybe if they just don't work for me or they don't work full stop and it just, and that's it. I just can't get behind them. They're so dull and they're good wrestlers, but there's just something doesn't click with them. And they're out there looking like they're in a war reenactment. And
wearing the horns that are historically inaccurate, as I discovered on my trip to Norway.
See, you've found a flaw in them as well.
Sorry, not horns, the helmets with horns. That's what I meant to say. Like, the helmets didn't have horns. That's what I learned when I was in Norway. That was the only thing I learned, apart from the fact that the beer's expensive.
This was a complete washout. Luckily for us, it continues on Raw, which we'll get to in a little bit. This was just crap. but then we got our first TLC match of the night, which was hopefully going to bring the crowd back to a frenzy, and well, it didn't really. It was Roman Reigns versus King Corbin. Corbin ends up getting help from Dolph Ziggler, he ends up getting help from the Revival, and they just lay waste to Roman Reigns, and Corbin ends up pinning him after an end of days onto a chair. What did you make of the match? It felt to me like it was the stuff that they did would have been more effective if the people in the match were more over.
Well, yeah, yeah. I would agree with that. What occurred to me while this beating was going on at the end and at the conclusion of the match, the Revival, Dolph and Corbin, all four of them were in the ring together, ganging up on Roman Reigns. Corbin hit the end of days on a chair, scored the 1-2-3. Where were Roman Reigns' pals? Why didn't someone from the back run out to help Roman Reigns? And this would have been the ideal moment to bring out a babyface or more than one babyface to associate them with Roman Reigns, to save Roman Reigns. I mean, okay, the same result could have happened if you wanted Corbin to go over Reigns. Although, you know, why must this feud continue? I mean, it's like they're trying to punish us. It's like they're doing this for their own amusement. I swear they are. But I just feel like, what did it say to the public that none of the other babyfaces would come out to save Roman Reigns when there's four heels, or Corbin and three other heels in the ring, beating him down? I just felt like it was a squandered opportunity and just something unrealistic about it, that faces wouldn't come out, you know, that heroes that are there to help each other, that are selfless and giving. And here we have a united group of villains ganging up on Reigns, and there's no babyfaces coming out to save Roman. I just thought that was a big, big waste, Kenny.
Locker room leader Roman Reigns.
Yeah, exactly. And that's been part of the storyline. It's like, well, it kind of illustrates that people in the locker room don't have faith in him, that they wouldn't come out there and rescue him from this, you know, 4-on-1 attack. Reigns is a good performer. Corbin's a good performer as well. But it just feels like this feud has just dragged on far too long because they don't have anything else for them. And the fact that Corbin won, it's like prolonging the agony again. And you're right. I mean, Dolph's not over. I mean, he just needs to disappear. His time is up and somebody else needs to be inserted in that spot who might get over. You know, with Dolph's, I don't need to go over that again. Everyone knows. I mean, Revival, I mean, good for them. You know, they didn't have a bad night. They actually received a little bit of a renewed push over last week. So good for them. But it just, I mean, 3 weeks from now, or even tomorrow, is anyone going to remember this match? They really aren't. What did it really achieve for Corbin? Nothing. Didn't really do much for Roman Reigns either. Should just mention before this match, Kenny, that we had an interview from The Miz. He said he moved his family to an undisclosed location, a safe house, to get them away from Bray Wyatt. You know, he cut this promo saying he's fighting for his family. You know, Miz is supposed to be an actor, and I thought this was one of his worst promos. I just thought it was totally unconvincing, and it should have been really easy for somebody to sell this one to the public, and I thought it was a massive flop. I just could not take him seriously at all. Did you see the promo, Kenny? What did you think?
Well, see, I actually didn't think the promo was too bad. I thought the problem that I kind of agree with you on is that, on one hand, he's telling us he's not the Miz, right? And he's, you know, he's a father who's out for the revenge of his child or whatever, right? That's the story. But yet he's still in this ridiculous outfit, and then he comes out with those stupid shades on, doing his whole ring entrance. So he's never really been more the Miz than he was at this point. So yeah. I feel like the whole, like, it's like sitting there, you know, bestowing the virtues of vegetarianism as you eat a beef burger in front of me. Just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, and then when Bray Wyatt comes out to do his entrance, the Miz, who, you know, Bray Wyatt infiltrated his home and put a puppet into the cot of his baby, and he just stands there and lets him do his full entrance around the ring and do four fake entrances in and do, like, play into the crowd, and he let him do the whole thing.
Yeah, and did nothing. I mean, he was just rendered impotent. And again, it just defeated the whole object of what this storyline was presumably trying to accomplish. It's like, you know, your words and your actions, you know, have to mirror each other. There has to be continuity between them. And if there isn't, then the whole thing just looks fake. It just looks, it just is totally unrealistic. And you're right, Bray Wyatt is having a whale of a time working the crowd, wandering around. At one point, he stopped to do a selfie with someone, didn't he, at ringside?
He did, and Miz just stood there, letting him do it.
Yeah, stood there. He should have been out of the ring, laying in. And when this match finally started, I mean, there was really no snap in the Miz's offense. He looked like that guy that Daniel Bryan, what was it, 3.5 years ago, or whatever it was now, accused, was it summer of 2016? I think it was, wasn't it, in the famous blow-up on Talking Smack?
Summer 17
or whatever it was. He looked like that guy that Daniel Bryan described all those years ago as somebody who wrestles like he's someone who's doing it and his sole goal is not to suffer an injury, is not to get hurt. The Miz, to me, has been an absolutely diabolical year for him. And this match here was just, I think it was just a disaster for him on so many levels. I mean, this was the night on which he was supposed to be, he told us he was seeking revenge, retribution. And he was just, it's just farting around in there, Kenny. I mean, it's just like, I can't take you seriously, Miz. Just got to be probably even worse than the Shane McMahon feud's performance here. I just lost all faith in the Miz based on everything that happened at TLC. You know, it's just, it was an interesting match because Bray's out there, he's wearing the Primark jumper, he's got the Universal title, and it's an interesting match because he's like the friendly guy. Oh, by the way, he came out to the theme tune from the Firefly Funhouse, you should mention that. So he's the character from the Firefly Funhouse videos, and he's allowing Miz to beat him up. But the beating's just not realistic because Miz, even though he's furious, livid, irate, seething apparently, he's not demonstrating this by his actions. So the match never really picks up steam. And this should have been an absolute savage beating by the Miz of Wyatt, so that when Wyatt finally made his comeback and won with Sister Abigail, it would have meant a lot more than it did. I mean, to me, Kenny, this was interesting to see Bray Wyatt out there for the first time as Bray Wyatt in the jumper, playing this different character. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, there's just so many flaws, so many holes in this presentation. from Miz's pre-match promo to Miz's entrance, as we've described. In fact, he just stands there while Bray lags around. And then the match is just, you know, Miz should have been a savage out there. And instead he was like somebody who was, it was like he just didn't matter. It was like, it was not like it was two pals wrestling each other, but there just wasn't that animosity there that there apparently was in the storyline. This was not reflected in the content of the match. Yeah, I mean, at least something happened after the match. What did you think of the match, Kenny, before we get to the post-match?
I actually loved the presentation of Bray Wyatt here. I mean, I think the presentation of The Miz was terrible, but I think he was just kind of the sacrificial lamb. And I feel like the kind of thing they're trying to tell with, you know, Wyatt being the Fiend and also being Firefly Funhouse, and it's two different characters, and that really works for me, and it kind of reminds me of, like, early Undertaker stuff where, like, the matches weren't particularly great but the story stuff was really fun. So that, to me, that's what I enjoy about it. I think that if this had been like Roman Reigns giving him Superman punches and spears and he was just laughing and not selling it, then I'd have a problem with it. But it's The Miz and his shitty offense, so it probably did deserve a laugh from Bray Wyatt for, you know, how unrealistic it was. But yeah, the Wyatt thing really worked for me. The Miz thing didn't. I'm curious how they're going to keep telling the story of the two people, because how do you keep having them have matches as the two different people without the other person in the match kind of just being the sacrificial lamb? Because I'm trying to think of a babyface that's not Roman Reigns. Daniel Bryan. Like, Daniel Bryan, by all accounts, should be able to just absolutely trounce Firefly Funhouse Bray Wyatt at all times.
Yes.
And yeah, really, it's just the Fiend that he has, you know, that he it takes him longer to beat, or it's much harder to beat. I'm just curious as to how they're going to keep telling this story. But I am intrigued by it, and the two kind of Jekyll and Hyde characters, or I guess Bruce Wayne and Batman, whatever you want to call it, is interesting. And it's maybe the most... Maybe to me, the most interesting character work of 2019.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But the post-match, we saw the return of Daniel Bryan with shaved head, looking literally like it's 2011. He looked so young, and he, you know, gave Bray a high knee, and he gave him a kick, and it looks like we're going to be getting maybe the Fiend and Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble. What did you make of Bryan's big return?
Yeah, it was. I mean, we expected a change to Bryan that had been telegraphed 2 weeks ago when the Fiend started yanking his hair out. So he returns with short hair, and as you say, yeah, it shaved years off him. Kenny, have you thought about maybe having short hair?
I've got a double crown, so I can't do it.
Oh,
I'd love to do it. I don't have the hairline for it, unfortunately. But thanks for bringing that up. That's really helped me out. Thanks.
Well, it'd save you spending all that money on hats. I mean, I know you've got a fairly big hat budget each month, Kenny. You know, I'm just trying to save you a few quid. Oh, honestly.
Right,
you
okay.
know, the thing is gratitude for you. Surrounded by ingrates. Always have been. So, yeah, Daniel Bryan returns with short hair and led the Yes chants as well. So that was a big part of it as well, wasn't it? That he's back and it's the old Daniel Bryan. And it will be interesting to see how they progress this one. Will there be a Bryan versus Bray Wyatt in the jumper match? And I think there will be before there's a Bryan versus the Fiend match, because I think that would be a nice setup. I imagine it's going to be Bryan versus the Fiend at Royal Rumble, and they'll have a match on TV before that where Bryan will defeat Bray Wyatt in the form that he took at TLC. That's what I'm predicting. But I was hoping for a louder reaction for Bryan than he received on the night. It was not as amazeballs as I wanted it to be, in all honesty, Kenny. But that doesn't mean that it can't get better from here. And I think Bryan will be absolutely committed to this one. He will be determined. He'll be looking back at that and thinking, you know what, we can do better than that. And I think they will do better than this. But yeah, it was interesting for the it is this match was interesting for to see Bray come out and do the entrance and just work the crowd. He seemed like he was having a ball. One other thing I should just mention as well, Kenny. Firefly Funhouse Bray has really no heel heat at all. He is a character that people find amusing. So that also sort of harmed The Miz, who's out there fuming, seeking retribution, and the audience is more interested in having a laugh with Bray. And that's really, if I was Miz right now, I'd be looking at that and thinking, oh dear, I am in trouble here. You know, no one really cares about me and what this guy did to Maryse and my two young children. So if I was Miz, I would be worried right now about that, because that is a really bad sign. And obviously we talked about the presentation being totally counterproductive for the Miz. You know, in a sense, he was there, he served his purpose, and it's now on to Wyatt versus Daniel Bryan. But, you know, had this been done slightly differently and things had been done differently, I think they could have still achieved what they did in the post-match, and they also could have enhanced The Miz to an extent as well.
We will see where it goes. We'll see if we get the Fiend match at Royal Rumble, or if, like you say, it's the Firefly Funhouse match. But then, like you said, the Funhouse Bray is difficult to boo because he is just so goofy that you kind of want to cheer him. Anyway, we have Bobby Lashley versus Rusev in a tables match, which Bobby Lashley wins with the help of Lana. Lana, who I guess you and I are going to have to disagree on, because I just think that she needs to be... She's a crime to acting. It is so impressive to me that someone as good looking as her can be so bad. Because, like, in this world, when you're good looking, you get away with a lot more than you do if you're not.
But she's... Well, I know all about that, Kenny.
you've coasted your whole life on that. But
exactly.
But Lana is so... I mean, imagine if Lana looked like an average person. Do you think she'd ever get hired for anything in wrestling?
No,
she can't act, she can't wrestle. And she's kind of... I guess we're now going down the Vicky Guerrero rabbit hole of, like, let's just have her shout and be loud and people hate it so much and that's going to be the way it goes. But, yeah, so, I mean, poor Rusev, but at least he only lost in a tables match. I assume he's going to get another win over Lashley at some point. What did you make of this one?
Yeah, it was... it was okay. That's all it was. I mean, the finish was blown, wasn't it? Lana jumped in, grabbed hold of Rusev, then she dropped off Rusev's back, and at that point, Lashley was supposed to spear Rusev through a table. The table was set up wrong, so when Rusev hit the table, it didn't break. Fans noticed immediately that it was a blown spot and that should have been the finish. Lashley, to his credit, alertly grabbed hold of Rusev and, like, flung him through another table for the win. So, I mean, they did manage to quell the booze there. We're talking of blown spots, Kenny. Yeah, we're just about to get to the main event, aren't we? It does appear that this feud is going to continue, especially after what happened on Raw on the following evening. We'll talk about that in a moment, I'm sure. It was the sort of match that probably would have been received better had it gone on second or third. Kind of felt too late in the show for this match with such a wrestling trash storyline attached to it. You can't really take it seriously. I don't think anyone's supposed to. So I thought that it was on too late in the show. We were then transported backstage to see Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin fighting. Now, we were supposed to think that they'd been fighting all along backstage, or it just started. What do you think?
I think we were supposed to believe that they... Well, I mean, it didn't make any sense, because Roman Reigns had been beaten, but, I mean, my favourite thing is they go to the trouble of having four people beat Roman Reigns, right?
Yeah.
And then, doesn't matter, still fighting him backstage. So, all the heat that you had...
Flushed.
Sandra and I reviewed TLC on Patreon, and we talked about the main event, the women's tag team ladder TLC match, and we came off the show, we finished podcast and all that, and about half an hour later, Sandra texted me, she went, we didn't even cover the brawl with the guys at the end of the show, because we forgot.
It was still ongoing. I mean, the stamina of these guys, Kenny. I mean, it's impressive, isn't it?
it's the whole thing. The main event is one that has not got a lot of great feedback from everybody, really. Nobody is a fan of this one. A lot of botched spots, a lot of bad communication. Kairi Sane gets hurt at one point. She's like running away from chair shots and stuff. It's very difficult to watch. The thing that I was thinking about today, because I was trying to think about something different I could say about this match that I hadn't said on the review on Patreon, is that like somebody had put a tweet out today, and I can't remember who it was, otherwise I would have credited them. And it was so true, and it was about the idea that like in December, WWE put on this TLC pay-per-view, which is not actually for anything. It's just like a thing they do. And all these people are doing all this crazy stuff with ladders and chairs for nothing. Like, it's not even for the end of a feud. It's just because it's December. Like, that's a bit of a slap in the face to the performers who do it. But, I mean, I can't imagine that you thought this main event was good.
No, it absolutely wasn't. I mean, I didn't like watching it. I read a little bit about it before I started watching it, and I thought it was going to be worse than how it wasn't as bad as it had been described online, but it was still a difficult watch for me, as I'm sure it was for everyone else out there. And you're right about, you know, another theme pay-per-view. So we've got to have all these matches because it's the theme of the show. We're having these matches because it's the theme of the show, not because the feuds necessitate these matches, that these matches are required by the feuds. The feuds have reached this point where they require this stipulation match to settle them. It's like, no, let's make the matches fit the stipulation, fit the gimmicks. And that there is a surefire, you know, ticket to fan indifference, especially after they'd seen so much on the undercard. I mean, they'd seen so many spots in the main show opener between New Day and the Revival. So much happened there that by the end of the show, did people really need to see any more stunts? And this was the whole principle, you know, 30 years ago of when you used to put a show on, you'd have like one cage match. You wouldn't have cage matches throughout the show. I mean, I know TNA ended up doing that with the lockdown concept some years back. But that was the whole reason why they didn't do it, so that the cage match was special and it was used for the blow off to a certain feud. It was, I mean, at ringside, there was chairs, there was stepladders everywhere. I mean, there was just clutter everywhere at ringside, hazards everywhere. At one point, they pinned Charlotte inside a chair with a kendo stick. Then they tied Becky Lynch to a stepladder and she laid there for ages and it looked ridiculous, Kenny. And this reminded me of the damsel in distress tied to the train tracks in the Silent Movie. I mean, did anyone else think that? She's just there for ages. It's just like wiggling her legs. I can't get out. Help. You're Becky Lynch. You're the man. People tell me you're the greatest wrestler in the world. Well, you aren't. You're supposed to be, you know, the star of the women's division. You're supposed to be a bigger star than the men. You headlined WrestleMania. And you're lying there like Penelope Pitstop waiting for the Antil mob to come and rescue you. I mean, I just thought it was just preposterous. Charlotte hurled Kairi Sane into the barrier with the, you know, with the overhead Razor Ramon sack of shit spot. I mean, that looked really nasty. Meanwhile, Lynch still hasn't freed herself from the stepladder. She finally broke free with help from Charlotte. Where it really fell down for me was when you could see Kairi was hurt when Charlotte hit her with the spear at ringside. And Kairi didn't sell it and she just fell down. And you could see Charlotte by this point, she knew the match had been tantamount to a disaster. And she like slapped her out of frustration. And then took her up for the powerbomb. And this was the moment, and we all know this, anyone who's been watching wrestling for any length of time knows this, but when we're watching, sometimes we don't think about it. And there was a moment in this match when Kairi was either concussed or knocked out or whatever she was, where you could just see how much cooperation plays a part in pro wrestling. We got Charlotte, who's apart from Tamina Snuka and Nia Jax, is, I would say, probably the biggest, largest and strongest female performer in WWE. Would you agree with that, Kenny?
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, and I would say Kairi's the smallest, I would have thought, and lightest. And the difficulty she had getting her up for that powerbomb spot through the table. And it was just like, I couldn't believe she even tried to do that move. Perhaps she didn't realize that Kairi was in the physical condition she was, but it just looked ugly. And then she hit her with that powerbomb through the table really hard. And I'm not suggesting that she was close to hitting that ladder that was propped up against the barrier, but it looked damn close. So I didn't like watching that. There's just clutter everywhere, the tripping over things, too many dangerous bumps that were inexpertly arranged. And it just felt to me like this some indie match between four people who didn't really know what they were doing. There was no structure to it. There's no flow to it. They were taking far too many chances. At the end, when Asuka climbed the ladder to grab the belt and retain, you can see Becky Lynch at ringside, and she just looked so upset. And this was a second consecutive main event that had played before, you know, a really flat atmosphere and had just not lived up to expectations. Obviously, this was far worse than the Survivor Series main event. And I'm not blaming it all on her. Absolutely, I'm not. Because there was a lot of parts of this match that were, obviously, it was all laid out in advance. I'm sure there's lots of parts of this match that she didn't have control over. But there was things that happened here that just made no sense. Maybe it would have been a lot better had Kairi not been injured. But to me, as soon as they worked out that she was injured, they should have just, I'm not saying they should have stopped the match, but they should have just got her out there, got a doctor over to her, and she should not have participated from that moment onwards. And seeing Charlotte do that powerbomb on her through a table, that was one of the ugliest things I've seen in wrestling this year. And yeah, it was a really low moment for me to see that. Really was. Just a really disappointing main event for all the reasons I've just explained. And then suddenly, Roman Reigns and Baron Corbin turn up, and then the show just ended.
They needed to give you a happy ending, which was that Roman Reigns wasn't dead and he was still fighting against the evil forces of the WWE.
I tell you, he must run marathons, Roman Reigns, in his spare time, mustn't he?
It's, oh my God. It's so strict. But, I mean, TLC was one of those, I mean, I liked the tag match, I liked Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy, and I liked the kind of presentation of Bray Wyatt in the match for The Miz. But, I mean, that's it. The rest of the show was just kind of a dud.
Yeah, just not essential at all, and you just didn't need to see it. And we were talking about it on the podcast last week, Kenny, and there was hardly any matches advertised in advance, which is all you need to know about how important this was to WWE. And, you know, they didn't have any excuses. There wasn't a show in Saudi. There wasn't all these other things going on. Why couldn't they have promoted this better than they did? And this all goes back to what I was saying at the start of the podcast. You know, you need to get your stars over. I mean, who did this really get over, the show? I mean, who came out of this show a bigger star than they were when they went into it? I mean, Buddy Murphy, maybe. I mean, Bray Wyatt, but he's a star anyway. He's Universal Champion. I mean, I guess Kofi Kingston is slightly reheated, but I mean, he's not going any further than this now. We know what that guy's all about. I mean, sure, you know, and on the flip side, I think it damaged a lot of people at the same time. So, yeah, it's up to WWE to get its act together, Kenny. You know, I'm not saying they're in any danger. Obviously, they're very successful and making a lot of money, but I think the product could be a lot better than it is.
So, I mean, we go from there to Raw, which was the fallout from TLC, and oh my God, I mean, this show just never ended. Like, so, yeah, I don't even know where we start. I mean, so we have Seth Rollins comes up to do a promo, and I just thought he did the most generic heel promo ever, where there was no real heat to it. And he basically said, I mean, he does kind of leave you hanging that, like, you know, for what he has to do tonight. You know, he's sorry and whatever. So that led you, he's going to do something. But remember when Seth Rollins used to be a good promo as a heel? Remember those days? What happened to that?
I don't know. It's like he's just had all the energy sucked out of him. It's like he just can't be bothered anymore. We've got the Authors of Pain there. I mean, they should be more involved than this. I mean, this is a huge opportunity for them. I'm sure, are wanting this to succeed. And I hope he does, because I think this team could be something. I think it could be something quite special. And being attached to Seth Rollins, or at least to Seth Rollins, that's going in there and giving it 100%, could really heat these guys up and make them into much bigger stars than they already are. But yeah, no pizzazz. Just didn't really seem to be any drive. He didn't seem to be hungry. You know, he's saying, there's a score to settle. There's a score I have to settle. Fans aren't going to like it. And I'm apologizing in advance for what I'm going to do. And it just wasn't delivered with any fire. You know, there wasn't any sort of... There's nothing dynamic about this version of Seth Rollins. He's just turned heel, for Christ's sake. I mean, they've been building to this for weeks. And now he's a heel. He should be going out there and burning it down, Kenny. And he certainly didn't do that in the opening segment.
No, and I'm with you. I think the team will, in the long term, be good. This just wasn't a great beginning to it. But this makes me almost have an aneurysm. So we have to sit through the Viking Raiders and the OC, which, by the way, remember when we always thought, if Gallows and Anderson go with AJ Styles, they'll be so much better. Here we are. And we have this...
How wrong we were.
And last night we saw, or the night before, we saw the 8-minute double countout, which leads to a 20-minute non-title match.
Yeah.
I felt like I aged 2 years watching this match.
Yeah, and Gallows and Anderson won, and afterwards, I think it was Samoa Joe. Is it Samoa Joe on commentary?
It was Samoa Joe.
Yeah. Oh, the new champions, Gallows and Anderson, new champions. And then someone corrected him. It was a non-title match. And he's like, well, they should be champions. And you're right, they should have been. After we'd sat through that match at that length, there should have been a title change, which would then hopefully have drawn a line under this feud. But no, as we discovered later on the show, it must continue.
It must continue. So we'll fire through some other pieces of dross on this show. So we get a Liv Morgan vignette, where she's basically being kind of sexy and getting in a bath, saying that she needs to change. I mean, I'm not holding out high hopes, but at least they're doing something with her. Kinda.
Liv Morgan has to destroy herself so the real her can emerge. I hope this works out better for Liv than Emelina did for Tennille Dashwood.
Oh God, you remember that? This should be a short story written on that. Up next, Meryl Streep, eat your heart out. Here comes Lana with Bobby Lashley, and she, I saw someone online was like, oh, Lana, she did this great thing where she took back, you know, women's rights by, she was the one that proposed to a man. It's like, look. I am all for a woman, you know, like Becky Lynch being the man and taking back, you know, I want women to feel that they are being well represented on this show. Lana's not a good representation. She is terrible. And then Lashley, he's just as bad. He's like, you know, Lana, so she's like, I want you to marry me, and hands him a ring. And he says, you know, Lana, I don't like when anybody tells me what to do. And then she looks like she's just been in a car crash, and he goes, except you. Oh! And then he proposes to her. So now in 2 weeks, we're going to have a wedding with Lana and Bobby Lashley, which, I mean, sure, why not? I'm sure nothing will go wrong, Finn.
Nothing ever does go wrong in wrestling weddings. I mean, it used to be a really good draw. I mean, I don't think this one's going to be. But it doesn't matter, because Vince is absolutely committed to this relationship.
But do you know what? These segments have worked for me before. Do you know why this one didn't?
Why?
No Rusev, the interesting guy in the story.
Well, you know, I think we're going to see him again, Kenny. I think you may have something there about a potential interruption. But I mean, I actually thought, as far as segments go, I thought this was Lana and Bobby Lashley's best one yet. I realized the benchmark is down there with, you know, whale piss, you know, whale shit. I mean, it's about as low as it gets. Oh, so, I mean, but I thought there was some, I was amused by this because it's supposed to be trash. I mean, I think I worked this out a while ago. I think last week I worked out this is supposed to be terrible. It's not supposed to be good. They're hamming it up. It's supposed to be utterly ridiculous. I mean, I think Lana in this role, I mean, what can you say? I mean, she said to Lashley, I want to ask you to ask me to marry me. And then, as you said, Lashley's like, well, I don't like people telling me what to do, except for you, Lana, and then proposes. I mean, they're not messing around, are they? I mean, it's just, you know, I've been with my other half for over 24 years, and we haven't got married yet. I mean, look at Lana and Lashley. They're already marching down the aisle in 2 weeks.
They're putting you to shame.
And Lana showing off the ring when she left. I mean, the highlight for me about these segments is Lana wears these ridiculous outfits that are all, you know Vince is picking them out. I mean, it's just stupid. It's dumb. It's supposed to be daft. This one was a little bit shorter than the previous ones. I actually found it mildly amusing, Kenny. So I'm going to have to disagree with you there.
It's okay. You're allowed to be wrong, but it's okay.
We know it's leading to a marriage. We know Rusev's going to get involved, and we know it's going to be crazy. And, you know, hopefully at the end of all this, Rusev will get his revenge. Lana will get her comeuppance, you know, maybe she'll disappear, but probably not, because I think she did sign a new contract recently, didn't she?
She did. Sadly, she's with us for years to come. Speaking of years, up next was the gauntlet match that took most of my life away from me, with Ricochet, Akira Tozawa, Humberto Carrillo, R-Truth, Matt Hardy, and Andrade, in a gauntlet match to determine who faces Rey Mysterio for the US title. It was terrible. It was Akira Tozawa beat R-Truth after he did a promo saying he was going to be the television champion. And like, R-Truth is like out there doing the shtick 5 years after the shtick was funny. And it's not. And then he's beat. And then Akira Tozawa beats him in 2 minutes. Then Ricochet beats Akira. Then Matt Hardy comes out and he gets beat. Which then we get Humberto Carrillo and Ricochet. And you'd expect that it was really good, but it kind of wasn't that great. Which then led to Andrade and Humberto Carrillo, and that ended up going to it ended up without a finish. After all the time of that gauntlet, Rey Mysterio comes out and basically Andrade does like a hammerlock DDT in the exposed floor. You know, Carrillo's getting stretchered away. So I'm like, we spent all this time on a 6-man match and there's no finish. And then Rollins comes out. I mean, this bit was actually good. But he came out with a steel pipe that he'd given Mysterio and he ends up getting AOP to beat Mysterio up and he's going to be the one that takes on Mysterio instead. So we sat through that big fucking gauntlet for nothing.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it was just, I mean, it wouldn't have been so bad had the matches been exciting, and they just weren't. And it was kind of extraordinary how uninteresting this gauntlet match was with this level of talent in it. And then at the end of it, as you said, there was no finish because Andrade, for no real reason, gave Carrillo he gave him the hammerlock DDT on the exposed concrete floor ringside. So, I mean, why would he do that? Why wouldn't he want to beat him, Kenny, so that he could receive the US title match with Rey Mysterio? Can you explain that one to me?
No idea. I can't explain any of it. It felt like they just, like, at the last minute were like, oh, we need to write a TV show today. Okay, go.
Yeah, I mean, how many people have been working on this? And like, oh, we need someone to fill up like a... How long did this last? Must have been half an hour. I mean, it just went on and on. I mean, it's just the matches were boring. I've written here boring. I've written yawn. And it's just like...
I love that you've written boring. You're like, I'll just write yawn after it. Just to hammer it home.
I mean, what's happened to Ricochet? I mean, the guy was on fire at Survivor Series. I mean, he had a tremendous night there, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
I mean, what's he done since? It's just like, and this is going back to, you know, the recurring, the central thread of this podcast. You know, you need to get some new stars, or you've got Ricochet, somebody that people really like, that's got tremendous talent, is very experienced. You know, okay, his promos aren't, A1, but I don't think he's a bad promo guy. I think he could be somebody who could really appeal to a new audience if you get him out front and really push him. And, like, they're doing nothing with him. I just don't understand it. I mean, Carrillo is a good talent and everything, but I just don't think he's got the charisma or the personality. I just don't think he's got that, you know, magnetism to really draw people in. And yet he's the one pinning Ricochet. And then, yeah, AOP and Seth Rollins come out. AOP beats down Rey Mysterio. This, of course, is Rey Mysterio comes out. So AOP beats down Rey Mysterio. Then Rollins hits the curb stomp. Rollins issues a challenge to Mysterio for a US title match next week. And later on the program, Mysterio accepted that challenge. So that match will happen next week. So at least they promoted something big for next week's episode of the program. So, wasn't a total waste of time. Unlike the next match. I think the next match could probably be described as a bit of a waste of time, couldn't it?
Or Asuka and Deonna Purrazzo.
Yeah.
They just brought her from NXT. I mean, the thing about this was, I mean, it was a waste of time. Asuka got the win. I did like that Becky Lynch did the sit-down interview where she talked about, you know, Asuka's the one person she hasn't been able to beat. And, you know, Asuka's got her number. So I do think they are, you know, in a roundabout way, booking Becky versus Asuka fairly well. I'm trying to give them one compliment on this show.
Yeah, I mean, Lynch was saying that things have been off for a few months and she seemed really down. So, I mean, yeah, they're going back to that match. I mean, I don't know whether Asuka's really as enthused about this WWE thing as she was. I think they've obviously done more with her in recent months. But, I mean, she was squandered for so long after Royal Rumble. That I'm not sure if the match is really going to be as good as we would like it to be. I'm not sure if her heart's really in it anymore. And after the year she's had, you know, who can blame her? And as for, you know, Becky Lynch is somebody right now who she kind of feels like she could be in trouble because she was, you know,
to have a great match.
So. She needs something big. She needs something big and she needs it soon. And also, you know, the whole man character, as kind of, she was on this, you know, upward trend, getting to WrestleMania, and then she kind of plateaued there. And it feels to me like she's been on a slightly downward trend, really, ever since the Lacey Evans feud. I mean, maybe there's been a little few spikes since the Natalya thing at SummerSlam was pretty good, and it's not been all terrible for her. But I think she's in a tough spot right now, and 1 year on from, you know, or coming on like, coming on 1 year on from when she was about to achieve her greatest triumph, it just feels like what's next for her? It just feels like she's done everything. You know, she's peaked. There isn't really anything there for her anymore. It's tough because who else is there? Who else is there for her to wrestle? Who could she wrestle at WrestleMania in 2020? Presumably she'll be facing Asuka at Royal Rumble. It seems like they're building towards that. But what can Becky Lynch do at WrestleMania next year? I mean, it's obviously not going to rival what she did at WrestleMania earlier this year in terms of going on last, because that's not going
to
happen.
Well, it's got to be the one-on-one match with Rousey, right?
Well, it's got to be. I mean, that's the only thing. That's what she needs right now. She needs Ronda to make a comeback, because otherwise, what she got for WrestleMania? She could be on the damn kickoff show at this rate. You know, that seems plausible to me. That could, probably won't happen, but who else? They can't book her or with Charlotte again. They simply can't. It's hard. I can't believe that Asuka's going to defeat her at Royal Rumble, setting up an Asuka-Lynch rematch at WrestleMania. I can't see that's going to happen. That doesn't seem feasible to me. But yeah, she's in a tough spot right now. She needs either Ronda Rousey to return, or they need to find, from somewhere, a big-name opponent for her. Maybe it'd be Nia Jax. You know, maybe they could bring Nia Jax in. I mean, I know that doesn't seem that exciting to many people.
There is a history there, though, with the she knocked her out and all that kind of stuff. So
exactly. It's that. And bring Nia in as a heel. And, you know, she is really good in that role. And it would probably be about time for her to return in the run-up to WrestleMania. I think she had, was it double knee surgery? I think she had that right after WrestleMania, didn't she?
She did, yeah. So she's due back around that time. So it'll be interesting to see how Becky Lynch, her new year ends up. I mean, I think the match with Asuka will be really good. So I think that will, you know, give a bit, little bit of goodwill back. But yeah, she needs a few kind of, I mean, that's two pay-per-views in a row that she's been a part of the headline match and they've just not hit. They've just not been what they need to be. The main event of this show, though, we got AJ Styles versus Randy Orton, and it was fine, but, you know, I mean, Orton gets the win with the out of nowhere RKO, and then Gallows and Anderson come in and beat up Orton, and then the Viking shitey war enactment raiders come out. And then, you know, the OC are basically standing tall, and just who cares? I finished watching the show this morning going, I've just spent 2.5 hours on this show. Like, if this was not your job, you'd probably just fast forward through it.
Yeah.
And go, oh well, nothing to watch here. But I know it was December, but I'm looking going, what are the Rumble Mania programs going to be? And I just can't really see anything that exciting. I know Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins will be a big match. Asuka and Becky will be a pretty big match, but apart from that, like, what else have they got? They've just got a bunch of really bland, tired performers that don't really seem to have that much buzz.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of people just stagnating that are just doing nothing. And even the people who are doing something, many of them are stale. I mean, who are the contenders who could win the Men's Royal Rumble this year, Kenny? I mean, surely not Roman Reigns again. Surely not.
You'd hope not. I mean, I'd like to see someone like, I mean, selfishly, I would say Drew. I'd love to see somebody like Drew win it or, you know, somebody different. I mean, KO winning it would be good. So, I mean, maybe it's KO and Lesnar. I mean, I have this bad feud. It's going to be Lesnar and Tyson Fury, but at WrestleMania, unfortunately, I can't fathom that's potentially going to happen. But, yeah, there just doesn't seem to be. There's a lot of stuff that they're doing that's not hit. You know, they brought in Cain Velasquez and it didn't really seem to hit. They brought in Tyson Fury, it didn't really seem to hit. They've got a bunch of guys that don't really seem to hit. So, I you know, and I know that you've said before, you just need a few weeks of consistently good TV. Well, boy, do they need a few weeks of consistently good TV.
They absolutely do. I mean, that's it. I mean, that can restore our faith. But I mean, you know, the bigger problem is the talent that they need that can headline or can conceivably headline. And it just doesn't feel like there's that many guys right now, and women as well, who they can book in these spots and that the audience will accept them as top talents. I mean, it's hard to really predict who's going to win the women's Royal Rumble match, a Royal Rumble, if there is one, I imagine there will be. I mean, who is there? Who can they? And the thing is, as well, as we said before, it's more difficult for them to bring NXT talent in now because NXT is its own separate entity with its own separate team. I know it was already its own separate entity, but it's not the feeder promotion anymore. It's not really the developmental league anymore. It's its own promotion with its own national television slot. So bringing talent up from NXT, I mean, I know they can still do it and they will do it, I'm sure, but it's not something that's going to happen, I think, as regularly as it did because the stars are needed for Wednesday nights, aren't they?
They are. And, you know, this Wednesday night, I mean, tomorrow night as we record this or tonight if you're listening on the main feed, but, you know, I mean, December 18th actually feels like the big night this week.
It does.
You know, you've got, I think that, you know, I know sometimes I've given AEW some criticisms, you know, over the kind of all the cults and stuff like that. But I think AEW and NXT have both done a pretty good job of building what this week's going to be. You know, whether it's the tag title match with the Young Bucks and SCU and Jericho taking on Jungle Boy for the Darby Allin Cody Rhodes tag team for AEW, or the Adam Cole Finn Balor and Rhea Ripley Shayna Baszler thing for NXT. Like, those are the shows that feel that the companies behind them are actually putting some effort into what is going on. And it's, I mean, I never thought that like 2 months ago that I'd be saying that WWE, it feels like their biggest, the show that means the most is NXT over Raw and SmackDown.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, Kenny. NXT has done a far better job of promoting this week's episode of NXT than WWE did of promoting TLC.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Just,
with the Adam Cole versus Balor for the NXT title, Rhea Ripley versus Shayna. I mean, they're two of the biggest matches that NXT could promote. And I just want to give, some credit as well to the Leo Rush versus Garza match on last week's NXT. I mean, I thought that was a tremendous performance by both. And it's great to see Garza win the Cruiserweight title. He was somebody that I never really thought of as championship material. I thought Leo Rush did amazing in this match as well. I thought he really redeemed himself there. So, I mean, yeah, I thought this week's NXT was really good, and I'm absolutely looking forward to the December 18th broadcast. I think it'd be tremendous. Even if there's nothing else on the show that's that good, you know Balor versus Cole's going to, that's going to sizzle. And I've got tremendous confidence in Rhea Ripley versus Shayna. I'm not sure if this is going to be Shayna's night to lose, but I think it probably should be. I think Rhea Ripley's done really well right now. And she would be somebody who could be brought in to face Becky Lynch. But as we just said, I mean, she's needed in NXT, isn't she?
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, the December 18th episodes are going to be the last shows of the year for NXT and AEW, so it makes sense to maybe give, you know, I mean, if both those shows went off the air with, like, you know, say the Bucks win the tag titles and Rhea wins the women's title, you're giving people, you're giving those audiences a moment they would want for the end of the year. You're giving them a happy ending, which is, you know, happy endings don't happen that often in wrestling anymore, as referenced by TLC. Anyway, so that is it. That's it for us. We will be back. We're going to do an overrun where we talk a little bit about NXT's presence at WrestleMania. We look at an old issue of Power Slam. But Finn, give us some plugs before we go.
Well, you know where my website is. You know, my books are out there. Actually, my new range of Power Slam t-shirts arrived 10 minutes before we started recording. So they've got a classic Power Slam logo. They're on a light graphite t-shirt. So I'll be advertising them on my website and on my Facebook, which is Finlay Martin. So look out for them. I think that's the only plugs I've got. What about you, Kenny?
You can also check out Finn's brand new article on our Patreon, which is This Is a Shoot, Brother, where he has compiled some of the best quotes by wrestling personalities present and past. I'm actually going to read one of the quotes without telling you who it's about. I'll read it out, and I won't say who it's by, but this could be a tease to read it. Vince McMahon has an expression: it's okay to make mistakes, but never make the same mistake twice. So you can see who said that, along with tons of other really cool stuff. Luthes and Kurt Angle, some Triple H stuff from Kevin Nash, loads of interesting stuff on there, along with obviously this podcast 24 hours early, an overrun, pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews. We just covered Armageddon 1999, God help us. tons of stuff over there.
We had a great time reviewing that. We had far more fun reviewing that show than we did watching it.
Yes, 100%. And you can also go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes. A new interview's up there with Medusa, actually, where she talks about her career and how she got the name and wrestling in Japan and wrestling men and being in WCW and all that kind of stuff. Really interesting stuff. As well as interview content with Cody, Jericho, Heyman, Bischoff, Moxley, and everybody in between. And then you can also get tickets to our JR and Conrad live grilling JR shows in February and our Kenny Omega shows in April at insidetheropes.co.uk/events. So we want to thank you very much for listening. We hope that you have a great Christmas. We will be back towards the end of next week. We'll maybe try and do something that kind of end of year, maybe end of decade next week when we get together. But we hope you have a good one. And if you're not a Christmas fan, we hope that you just order yourself a dirty takeaway and watch something good on Netflix.
Yeah, well, however you celebrate it, or if you choose not to celebrate it, we hope you have a really good time next week, and we'll look forward to podcasting for you again right after Christmas.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.